Tchaikovsky's 1812 Overture. It's perhaps one of the most popular pieces of classical music ever written. In fact, it's so familiar, we realized we'd forgotten what it's all about. So we're going to take a closer listen to the 1812 Overture, and here to help me out, I'm joined by Rhode Island Public Radio producer and fellow classical music enthusiast, Jimena Condi. Hi, Jimena.
Hey, John.
So, Jimena, the 1812 Overture, it's maybe one of Peter Tchaikovsky's most famous works, and this guy has some major hits, including The Nutcracker and Romeo and Juliet.
I'm just going to jump right in here for a minute. What makes this work so amazing is that Tchaikovsky manages to pack a bit of European history into 15 minutes of music.
What do you mean by that?
First, we need to clarify. This is not about the American War of 1812 between the U.S. and Britain, nor was it written in 1812. It's actually about the Napoleonic Wars. The piece is a celebration of the Russian victory over Napoleon.
Okay, yeah, the cannons and the celebration and all that stuff.
Yeah, but the cannons come later. Tchaikovsky actually opens the piece with a prayer. So you can hear this hymn-like tune.
It really is a religious song. It's played by just the cellos and the few violas, and it's called, O Lord, Save Thy People.
I'd like to introduce someone here.
There we go. Looks like it's working. Good. Hi, this is Carl Grapentine.
Hello, Carl. You're a classical music radio host based out of Chicago.
And for the last 31 years, I've been here at WFMT in Chicago, and I've hosted the morning program bright and early for most of those 31 years.
So, Carl, why does Tchaikovsky start with this quiet, slow sound? It's not exactly the rabble-rousing part everyone knows.
Oh, I think it's an effective way to build up to it. You don't want to just start and, you know, bang away for 15 minutes. So, with that sort of that prayer, it could be thought of as, a prayer before battle, for that matter.
But then the battle begins. And you can just imagine this peaceful, idyllic Russian landscape interrupted by the creeping menace of the French army. Now, if you remember your European history, Napoleon was an officer in the French army after the Revolution. After some success on the battlefield, he convinces the French Senate to name him emperor. He decides to expand the French Empire and starts marching through Europe, conquering nations.
And this is where Tchaikovsky's overture really starts to get interesting. Here's Carl again to explain.
As it generates a little more excitement later on, the first hints of the battle, you begin to hear snippets of the French national anthem, La Marseillaise.
Then we get this big battle between the French and the Russians. Now, this is not exactly an accurate musical representation of what mostly happened. The Russians didn't really fight Napoleon's army.
What?
Well, they do, but not the way you might be picturing armies lined up on the battlefield. In fact, the Russian army retreats, runs away from the French army, but it was a strategic retreat. The Russians themselves go around burning their own lands and resources, so by the time the French reach Moscow, it's pretty much empty. Basically, they just tire the French out.
Wow, things are sounding kind of bleak here at this point in the music.
But then just listen, out of that bleakness bursts this grand Russian song called God Save the Tsar.
Ah, Russia triumphant. So, Tchaikovsky sounds like he's being a little loose with history here. I mean, judging by this music, you'd guess the Russians had some sort of Game of Thrones-style battle.
Well, remember, this piece was written well after 1812, and it was kind of a propaganda piece to celebrate Russian history. Tchaikovsky was commissioned to write it for a cathedral opening some 70 years later. And if you want to talk about being loose with history, those songs he references weren't exactly accurate either. Carl puts it really well.
Even though we associate the Marseillaise with the French Revolution, it wasn't really written until a few years after in 1795. But then Napoleon banned that song during his reign, so it would not have been used during the Battle of 1812. And as for God Save the Tsar, it hadn't been composed yet in 1812. So really, both of those tunes don't belong, even though they're, you know, really part of the success of the piece.
And it really has been a success. It's practically a requirement for any 4th of July celebration. I mean, Carl, why do we hear this piece every summer in Pops concerts or with fireworks?
Good question. I think it's just all about the cannons. Really, I think that's the only reason. I mean, if you think about it, it really is kind of strange that we play it at American patriotic celebrations. But as I always say, nothing says America like the Russians defeating the French.
And Carl, you say the tradition is really rooted in modern Pops orchestras, correct?
I think most people trace the practice back to Arthur Fiedler and the Boston Pops. You know, he started using it to accompany the annual 4th of July fireworks on the river in Boston, and now it's just become what everybody does.
So if you're a classical music radio host like Carl or an orchestra musician, you're probably going to be playing this piece a lot.
Oh, but that's not the end of the story. Though audiences love the 1812 Overture, it turns out Tchaikovsky didn't like the piece.
Really?
I think he considered it a commission and nothing more. He wrote once in a letter to his benefactor, "I am not a conductor of festival pieces." Maybe that was before that first performance. But he went on to say the overture would be very loud and noisy, but without artistic merit, because I wrote it without warmth and without love.
Wow, harsh words.
But maybe Tchaikovsky was wrong. His opinion doesn't seem to have any bearing on people's love of this piece.
I'm John Bender.
I'm Jimena Condi. Thanks to Carl Grapentine from WFMT in Chicago. This is Rhode Island Public Radio.